Monty Show, Tuesday, September 11th, 2018. Hi, Jake.
Hello.
Good to see you. Good to have everybody with us, folks. I just want to start the show again. And it feels like I've been saying this a lot, Jake, but another record-breaking week comes to a close on The Monty Show. Thank you so much for listening to the show. We're killing it. So let's keep killing it. We're going to talk a lot of college football today. Coming up, the SEC, Georgia, Alabama, the Pac-12, Stanford, ASU, BYU, Utah, Washington. How much are you on Facebook? Have you deleted Facebook from your phone? Is Sam Darnold going to be the first USC quarterback in recent memory to make it? All that straight ahead. And, of course, the Cubs are playing right now against the Brewers at Wrigley Field, so they're probably going to lose.
Okay.
I was waiting for you to come in with sarcasm.
I couldn't do it. It's just too early on.
Make sure you find me on Twitter, The Monty Show. M-O-N-T-Y, The Monty Show. That's also what you look for in the iTunes Store, Google Play, SoundCloud, iHeartRadio app, you name it. That's where you search The Monty Show. M-O-N-T-Y, The Monty Show. Let's talk some college football, young Jake. I think it is an incredible start to the season. When you have a team like Alabama, is there any doubt or do you doubt that Alabama's the best team in the country right now?
No, and I think it was presumed going into the year. I mean, every year we're constantly talking about how Alabama is the...
Roll Tide Alabama.
You know, every year Alabama is number one, top 25. It's just that simple. And we talked about it how, you know, they're only putting... you know, teams like that on the schedule because they're trying to work their depth. And there's a reason they're good. They're in the SEC. It's Nick Saban. It's a recruiting powerhouse. And then you have Nike doing what Nike did, and now kids want to go to your school even more. So I just think there's a reason they're number one.
And I think a lot of people get upset because Alabama's good every year. But I think you also have to realize there's a reason for that. You know, when you have Tagovailoa as your quarterback and Jalen Hurts can't get on the field, Well, look, Tua's at Alabama because he wants to win a national championship. And that's as plainly and as simply as I can put it. And that's the luxury of having Nick Saban as your head coach. And you just stack championships. And that's why Alabama's good. So I think there's a lot of frustration on that. But you know what else, Jake? I think Georgia is a really good football team. Sure, we're only 2 weeks in. And Clemson's 2-0 and Georgia's 2-0 and Ohio State and Oklahoma, Wisconsin, hello BYU, Wisconsin's good. Like there's a lot of good football. And as I go through this top 25, oddly enough, as a kid who grew up loving Notre Dame football, I think in the top 10, Notre Dame is the biggest question mark in the top 10 right now.
Yeah, there's been a lot of inconsistency, and I didn't like their performance. I thought it was very up and down,
It was a letdown game, though.
Yeah, I mean, it was a letdown game, but I felt like they could have done better. And so I just feel like, yeah, they're a big question mark.
Am I making an excuse? Because obviously you're coming off of a big win against Michigan, and then Ball State comes in, and Wimbush is not fantastic. He's not even fabulous in that game. He just looked lost. You didn't really run the ball well. You didn't throw the ball well. And you looked a little shaky on defense. But at the end of the day, you got the job done.
Yeah, the positive person would say, well, they got the job done. You know, they fought through adversity. Like, they struggled, but they still won the game. The negative side, or hashtag the realist, would say
they
should have had a better performance. You're Notre Dame. You should have run away with that game. It shouldn't even been close. And so I think it depends on your perspective, but for the most part, they got the win, and that's what matters.
Yeah, I think Notre Dame has some questions that are going to have to be answered, and I don't know who it is that is going to answer that, but they have Vandy this weekend, Wake in 2 weeks, and then they play Stanford on the 29th of September. And the schedule doesn't get easier after that because then they go to Virginia Tech. So we're going to find out who...
Yeah, they're going to get tested.
Yeah, we're going to find out who Notre Dame is. But I think even more interesting than that, I think there's a lot of questions about who the Pac-12 is. And I think we learned a lot of lessons this weekend. We gave you lock after lock in college football this weekend. We had a really good weekend of picks, right? And one of the games we gave you was Arizona State winning late on a field goal. And that's exactly what they did. And I don't call it an upset. Yes, they beat a ranked Michigan State team. I don't call that an upset because I think you had to believe Arizona State was going to win that game. But is Arizona State now the 23rd ranked team in the country? Is Arizona State a program that you believe in? Herman Edwards now is the leader, and they're building, and they're adding talent, which, by the way, at this point is not true because he's got all the same players they had last year.
Yeah.
So are they a better team? Is there something different about them?
Well, I think the only difference is the coaching staff. I mean, this is the literal difference from last year to this year. You see the difference come into play. But I will say, I'll be really curious to see what Herm's able to do over the course of the entire season, because it's cool that you came out and you were able to beat this team, a ranked team that, you know, allegedly nobody thought you should win and was a big upset. But you're right. I mean, they're more than capable. Last year, there were so many games where we said
at
they were in position.
100 degrees.
Dude, you're in position to win the game. Execute, and you win the game.
Yep. I agree. And again, talking about schedules, they're at San Diego State this weekend. I think that's a real ball buster. But then it's at Washington. They've also got road games at Colorado, at USC, Oregon, and Arizona. You know, the rivalry games in Tucson this year. So I say all of that to say I have real concerns. I have real questions about the best team in the Pac-12. Right now, I'm pretty confident that it's Stanford.
Mm-hmm.
But this Bryce Love injury, he's not going to play. Now, granted, it's UC Davis, I think they have this weekend.
Should still win.
Yeah, you should still win. And it's a good idea, I think, to give Bryce the weekend off if you can. But you got to keep it real in the North, because Oregon's good. I think the Cal defense is legit. We saw that in Provo last weekend. They played really well, and everybody wants to sleep on Washington now because they lost and they're 1-1. I wouldn't sleep on Washington. I would not. And we're going to talk a lot about the Huskies because they've got Utah this weekend. But I think the North is good. I think the Pac-12 South is wide open. I have no idea who the best team in the South is right now.
No, there's no question about it. I think you look at Utah, and they've got a great defense. I think you look around at the other teams. USC is talented. They're more than capable of beating quite a few teams.
But see, this is why I brought up Arizona State.
Right.
Is ASU good enough? Because I happen to believe that Utah's the best team in the South. I did not like what I saw out of USC at Stanford this past weekend. I did not like at all what I've seen out of Arizona. That's just a bad football team. UCLA's a bad football team right now.
Yeah.
So the South is wide open. And for my money, I think it's going to come down to potentially that Arizona State-Utah game, which I think is in late October here. No, I guess that's in Tempe. That's in Tempe, that game. So I think that's going to be a real important football game.
I think it being in Tempe sort of neutralizes,
sorry, November 3rd. November 3rd in Tempe.
Yeah, so I think that's a very even game. I think if you're ASU and you had to go to Salt Lake, that's not looking good for you.
Yeah.
But the fact that the Utes have to come south and they got to come to your field, I think that's a very even matchup. Again, another game where I would say ASU should go out and win that game against a really good Utah defense.
Well, and we'll see who's healthy because, again, Utah, you know, thus far is the number one defense in the country, which is not surprising. But let's talk a little Utah. Let's start Utah-Washington. And my question is, do you have enough offense at Utah to compete with a really, really good defense in Washington?
Well, I don't know. I mean, if Zach Moss is healthy and able to run the ball, that's a really good thing. Tyler Huntley should not be running the football.
Oh,
if he's
amen.
Running the ball, that's not going to be good for the Utes. And I can only say so many times that the longer your defense is on the field, the lower your odds are of winning the game. A great defense can only be great if they're rested. And so every time they got to go out for an extra possession because Moss couldn't pound the rock and get that first down when you really needed it.
And Huntley's losing yards per carry.
Exactly. You know, when you don't have a dominant running back like that in the game, it really changes the outcome of the matchup. And so I think his contribution to this team is vital. But again, when you have the number one defense in the nation, that, I mean, you're always going to rely on that. You're always going to fall back
you
on that.
You just have to get all the Utes have to do offensively is not turn the football over. That's incredibly important. And you have to be in third and short.
Yeah.
Give me third and three, third and four on a consistent
basis.
But
how do you get there? You can't be conservative in your play calling. You can't be, and this is what drove me nuts about a couple of the matchups over the weekend. You get a big lead. You know, you get a big lead, you get out in front, and then the second half you come out all conservative, running the football. Like, you're not doing a good job. It's that simple. You're not going to beat a team by just running the football.
Well, Huntley had 19 carries for minus 9 yards. That's incredible. Against NIU, and I'm not saying that NIU's a terrible football team.
No,
I'm
but
not.
You shouldn't have, on 19 carries, you shouldn't have negative yardage.
You're losing half a yard every time you carry the football at that point.
That's not good.
That, I thought, was a huge problem. When Zach Moss went out with that ankle, I thought for sure they were going to lose that game. And then what did I say? I tweeted it, and I'm not trying to pat myself on the back, but I tweeted it. It feels like the defense is going to have to score a touchdown, and they will, comma, to win the game. That's exactly what I tweeted, and they did. Because Chase Hansen and Cody Barton are beasts.
That was a beautiful play by Hansen.
Oh, man.
Beautiful.
You have to respect Utah on defense. I don't care if they are the best defense in the country as they're currently ranked, or the worst defense in the country. They're going to be good defensively. I don't care what the numbers say. They're going to have really good linebacker play, and they are going to be gap sound on that defensive line.
Bro.
Yeah, I exactly right. And I think now what we're seeing in TDS down in Provo, what are we seeing in Provo with that defense? Kalani Sitake is focused on that defense. So we're starting to see guys getting to the football. We're starting to see BYU playing a much more physical brand of football on the defensive line, trying, and I think they took a half step back in gap control against Cal, but they're trying to be a gap control defense, and I think we're starting to see that Kyle Whittingham influence get into the defense in Provo. And that's a very, very, very good thing.
Yeah, I mean, how long have we been saying that this is now Kalani's team? Now he's finally putting his stamp on the team.
Yeah.
And that, if I'm Kalani, I am implementing a Kyle Whittingham style of defense, or at least his, you know, his cornerstones of defense. I mean, why wouldn't you? It's a dominant product.
Well, I love watching Chase Hansen. I think everybody knew when he got off his mission, he came off his mission, he was not going to be a quarterback. He had odd mechanics. He's too athletic, and something that the Utes specialize in is taking their best athletes and turning them into NFL defensive players.
Yeah.
And Chase Hansen, if he continues on this streak, now he's got to stay healthy. And in the Pac-12, as a guy that flies to the football, it's very difficult to stay healthy. But if he stays healthy, he's probably gonna score probably three more touchdowns. He'll probably have four on the year. And he is going to get a real look in the National Football League. And I this game against Washington, and it's going to be one of our locks of the week on the show Friday. This game against Washington is an absolute measuring stick for the Utah Utes. And it's at home, and so you feel good about it. But boy, the line and where the money's coming in right now is real questionable. So we'll talk a lot of Utes football as the week goes on. Let's keep going with BYU at Camp Randall, in, I think, one of the most difficult environments to play football at Wisconsin.
You're talking about a test. This is an absolute test.
Oh, man. I can't see a way that you can... I'm trying to measure my words on Tanner Mangum.
Mm-hmm.
He's not a kid. He's 25 years old. He's a senior.
Yeah.
He's not good enough to start at BYU, or in my opinion, has not demonstrated the ability to be the number one quarterback at BYU at this point.
Yeah, you just don't know what you're getting, and that's the biggest problem. I mean, he had one good week, then he's had one garbage week.
Well, let's be honest what he had. He had an okay week. The Arizona game was okay. Okay, he won the job out of camp, which you have to respect, right? And I'm not saying he played poorly against Arizona. They won the football game 28-23, and that game was more about what Arizona did in the fourth quarter and what BYU did not.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at the performance of Tanner Mangum against Arizona, 18-28, 209, and a touchdown. The key phrase that I'm leaving out is interception, which he threw none of.
Yeah.
You fast forward to Cal last weekend, and it's mind-numbing. Tanner Mangum played terrible football against Cal. for most of that game. And this is where I want to be careful, but I don't know any other way to say this or package this than just to be brutally honest. If Zach Wilson played the second half of that game, I think BYU wins. Because Tanner Mangum looked like he was limiting himself. And yes, as they got later and later into the game, and as desperation, I think, sank in for Tanner, he played a little freer. He played a little looser.
Yeah.
He made better decisions. He had a terrible game.
Yeah.
Now, is that a one-off? I don't believe it is.
No, I mean, based on last year and you know, this game, I don't think it's a one-off. I think everybody knows what his ceiling is. You know what this guy can do for you. So the question is, well, can, you know, the other guy do more for you? Can the other guy come in for a half of football and win you a game? I don't know, but I think you got to start him at Wisconsin just because if he's garbage in that first quarter, you got to take him out.
He just was not good. He had a 19.4 QBR against Cal.
Awful.
Now, Cal's defense is really good. I think it's top tier in the Pac-12.
I hesitate to say that doesn't matter, but as a quarterback, there is no defender that is going to beat you if you're at your best.
They needed him because they ran for 91 yards. That was their rushing number. Squally had 49 yards, 16 carries. That's how good Cal is. 3.1 yards
a carry.
But see,
so they limited you on the run. So your point is, well, if we had a quarterback that was worth anything or could execute or could shred a defense, we'd have won that game easy.
And I'm telling you that Squally and Pini Katoa would have had more room to run. I love Pini Katoa. He's a guy that was a joy to watch in high school. And I'm thrilled he's at BYU. But they didn't have any room to run against Cal because Cal didn't have to respect the throw. And part of this, by the way, part of the passing game issues at BYU are not on Tanner. It's the fact that your wide receivers, there's not a guy in that wide receiving room that's going to take the top off the defense. And if there is, we haven't seen it yet. And I think we certainly got to look at guys like, you know, Romney and Colley and you don't get the feeling that they have a guy that you have to respect deep. That's
a huge problem. I mean, for any offense, that's a massive problem. You look at the best offenses both in college and in pro. They all have a guy who can just run a seam and say goodbye. And if your quarterback can hit him deep, then you can hit him, you know, and that completely changes the dynamic of the defense because, like you were saying, if they don't have to respect the pass, then they're just going to sell out on the run.
And
why wouldn't we load the box?
Because that was how BYU wound up beating Arizona. Because they were able to convert early in that game or earlier in that game. And you felt like, hey, we can build on what we did. You know, Squally ran 24 times. He had 3 scores. You felt really good about that.
Yeah.
You had Pini Katoa, you know, running for 39 yards. You were able to throw to the backs, which I thought was really lacking against Cal. They did not throw the football to the backs very well. Lu'ulu Putu-Tau, I thought, was okay. I mean, obviously, he was a featured guy against Cal, but that didn't do much for you. They have a wide receiver issue, and it's I point that out not to say, okay, well, BYU is too slow and they don't have enough athletes. That's not why I'm saying that. My point is, your quarterback has to be really good.
Yeah.
When you don't have elite receivers, and the example I'll use in the NFL is your boy Tom Terrific.
Yeah.
TB12 can take anybody.
Chris Hogan.
Dylan Colley would probably be a 100-yard receiver in New England.
Well, and the trouble with it is that an offense is like a house of cards, right? So if your core of that, if your bottom piece, the quarterback that's holding the offense together, isn't elite or doesn't have one portion of his game that he can really lean on and he can go to at any time in the game. Okay, so, you know, if you don't have anything to go to, now your average wide receivers plus that, plus the fact that you can pretty much only run the ball, I mean, it all just goes downhill.
Yeah.
And so that's what you're dealing with at BYU right now. And I think the conundrum is, okay, well, how long is the leash? How long do we give Tanner Mangum? Because if he's awful, obviously people are already calling for him to be replaced, but if you're Kalani, at some point you have to just say, okay, look, sorry, bud, like you just haven't been good enough. And we got a guy on the bench who we feel like is better.
Yeah.
And that's just and the fact of life.
By the way, what's the truth that needs to be told about Zach Wilson? Well, he went to Corner Canyon, so he's a local kid, right? He's a guy that was, I believe he was an early enrollee. Like, he's invested in BYU football. And if a kid from Corner Canyon can go to BYU and be a legit number one quarterback, that's going to help you recruit. Not just quarterbacks, that's going to help you win the recruiting battle in the state of Utah. And I think that's really important because BYU right now, BYU's not playing to do anything other than at least get bowl eligible this year. What you cannot do is win four games, miss a bowl, and fire your coaching staff. But you feel like, and maybe this is me, and maybe I'm a little bit hitting the panic button. I feel like you're teetering on mediocrity with this football team if you leave Tanner Mangum in the game.
Well, I think there's no doubt.
If you start him, and my guess is he'll start at Wisconsin.
Yeah.
If he has a bad first quarter, I think you got to pull him. You have to have a hair trigger on him this weekend.
Yes.
Because if you can get Zach Wilson into the game and you can find a way to win or compete or be close or not get your ass kicked like you have against Notre Dame, like you have against Wisconsin, don't get pushed around to the extent you got pushed around against Cal. If you can do that and feel good about yourself, win or lose, if you can leave Camp Randall saying, we had a chance to win that game, boy, that's a very good thing.
Well, and what happens when you bring in a guy who's ready to go, a guy who's trying to earn his spot? It energizes everybody. Everybody's going to lift up. That offensive line's going to lift up. The wide receiver's going to say, uh-oh, we got a new guy behind center, under center, you know, and he's going to be ready to go.
Yeah.
And so everybody's going to take a step up in energy, in effort, in performance. I mean, Kalani can preach all day that they tried hard. Tried hard's not good enough anymore. We got to, like, win games now. You know, so I think you're exactly right. If he comes out and has a bad first quarter, I would say if he has an awful first three possessions, you got to pull him. Like, if he turns the ball over, if they're three and out on the first possession, like, you got to make a change.
You cannot struggle to move the ball on offense. That's you just can't do that. And the other thing, before we get off of BYU, this defense has to get off the field on third down. I think those two things, your inability to move the ball, and this is what you were talking about earlier, I think, not to put words in your mouth, but they couldn't convert on offense, so they struggled on defense. And your legs get a little, you know, get a little more soft. You get a little more jello in those legs.
You just lose that quick twitch. That's what you lose.
The more you're on the field.
Yeah, man.
So I agree with you on that. It'll be interesting to see. This is a critical stretch for BYU. Right now.
For Kalani.
Yeah, I think it's absolutely a critical stretch. And as I look around the Pac-12, it's a critical stretch for USC. I think this weekend, Washington is playing for their season this weekend. Because if you lose to Auburn and you lose to Utah, your season's over.
Yeah.
You're going to a mid-level bowl. And you're not going to the playoffs. And I think you're already seeing the relegation of USC. I think on Monday, we're going to figure out if Washington, on this show, we're going to have a real serious conversation about the Washington Huskies one way or the other. I just think this is such a pivotal weekend. And I know that there's not a lot of great games. I think there's four really critical games, you know, like LSU, Auburn, obviously that's a top 20 matchup.
Yeah.
Ohio State at TCU. This is the big, it's in Arlington, and I say it's at TCU. Let's be honest, it's a home game for TCU. But Ohio State's last game without Urban Meyer on the sideline. USC at Texas, a teetering USC team that's got to go to Texas and try to win a game.
Yeah.
If they lose this game, do they ever get back in the top 25 this season? USC, it's going to be a fight. ASU at San Diego State. ASU just into the top 25 at 23.
Yeah.
San Diego State has been an Achilles heel for ASU the last several years.
And even last year, I mean, San Diego State just pounded them. You know, Penny just absolutely ran all over them. And I think, again, I just think when we look at what this coming weekend is going to be for college football, anywhere you look, it is almost like this is prove it weekend, whether it's BYU, whether it's UW proving it for Pac-12, because frankly, I think they're the only team that's got any kind of shot to do anything nationally.
If Utah wins the South, I mean, if you...
Well, but think about this. Think about this. So if Utah wins the South, so that means that they're going to have to beat Washington, right? And then they're going to have to beat a bunch of other teams in their own conference. So you
end then you got to go to the Pac-12 championship game, likely against Stanford.
Sure. So then you got to win that game. So there's a...
It's a long way to go.
Do we feel, though... I think the question when it comes to that conversation is, who would you rather be doing that with? UW or Utah? I don't know.
I'd rather be doing it with Utah. Because I think if, to your point... If Zach Moss is healthy, and if he can stay healthy, and again, we're talking about what's going to happen in November.
Right.
And we're in September, so that's risky.
But that's far away, and that's a lot of reps. I mean, there's a lot of opportunity to hurt yourself.
But I freely admit that I probably overvalue defense in college football, but I think at this moment in time, there's a lot of questions about Washington's offense. A lot. That defense is still really good.
Yeah.
There's a lot of questions about the Huskies on offense. So you're going to Salt Lake City to play the number one defense in the country against what I think is a shaky offense at Washington.
Prove it.
And again, we're going to hand you a lock on that game on Friday. But this, you're exactly right. That's a prove it game for UW. So we'll see. This is going to be a really difficult weekend to lock games. We started off with a bang last weekend. I'm hoping we can recreate that.
It's not easy every week, but
we can recreate
that. If it was easy, everybody would do it.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Let's talk some NFL here on the show. Make sure you follow me on Twitter, The Monty Show. M-O-N-T-Y, The Monty Show. It is Tuesday after week one. And I think we saw a lot of interesting trends coming out of week one.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of it focuses on the quarterbacks around the National Football League. What was the first question that was asked of you when you arrived at your big time, high paying power position of recruiter this morning at work? What was the first question that was asked of you?
Hey man. Hey, yeah, you over there, the guy who doesn't know how to draft. What would it take to get Kirk Cousins from you?
Now, I am a guy that is sold all out on the Vikings. I am a huge Vikings believer. We made a decision to draft the Vikings.
Mm-hmm.
So you have Kirk Cousins. You have Kyle Rudolph. Yep. You have Latavius Murray.
Yes.
All those guys performed.
Well, Murray was on my bench.
Right, but it doesn't matter. But it doesn't matter. He gives you an option.
I mean, he still gives me an option. But I thought Cousins' performance was solid. I think that's going to be his usual. He gave me like 23 points, I think, or 24 points. Had a nice solid performance.
You're going to get probably 5 30 point games out of him.
And that's what I'm talking about. That's what I need for my quarterback. Give me a high baseline, and then give me a couple 400-yard games a year, and I'll be happy.
Do you buy that the Vikings are the best team in the North? Because I think we saw something really interesting at Lambeau. We saw the season come to an end for the Green Bay Packers.
Yep.
And then on the flip of a coin, we saw the season come back to life, and they took a huge step forward with Aaron Rodgers. And now we have this, what feels like a really big game in week two.
Yeah.
And I want to buy the Vikings so badly.
Oh, I am buying the Vikings.
I want to buy the Vikings. That defense.
But because look at where Brady and the Packers were against the Bears. You were down 20. You frankly got your ass handed to you in that first half. And I'm not trying to be a Bears homer, but let's be real. The Bears won the first half. Now, they lost the second half.
Won the first half. They won the Super Bowl in the first half.
You know what I mean? So they came out and they dominated the Packers. And so I just say, guys like Fuller, they're not on the Vikings. You have a much better defense on the Vikings. You know, and so I think, you know, if you put the Vikings defense in the position where the Bears defense were, I think the Bears win that game. I think they easily win that game because Fuller's not dropping that pass. And people, you know, you talk about my job. People today at work are like, well, Fuller wasn't expecting the pass. Bro, he watched it all the way in. It hit him right in the chest. What do you mean? And so I'm just sitting here saying the guy drops how many out of 10 off the jugs machine? At least 5?
He
can't catch the football.
He dropped 4 of 10 off a jugs machine.
It's embarrassing. Like, I don't mean to rip the guy, but you're an NFL quarterback. You got to have ball skills, man.
Yeah. The Vikings are going to Lambeau to play Green Bay in an early game. And I think it is one of the big early season games that we always seem to get in September in the National Football League. And yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
And I love the Vikings in this game.
And see, this is why I like Kirk Cousins so much. Because Kirk Cousins didn't come from a team that played inside all the time like the Saints do, for instance. He came from the Redskins, a team that played a lot of cold weather games, a lot of bad weather games, a lot of games that are grinder games. So going to Lambeau won't be a problem for Kirk Cousins.
No.
And really, my only question is, can guys like Diggs continue to perform for the Vikings? Because if he performs and Kyle Rudolph finally hits his stride, I say finally in week two, you know, I think they're going to be in great shape. I think they win the North, and I think they go deep in the playoffs.
Speaking of that Sunday night game, Mitchell Trubisky had a great first half. He was a zero in the second half. He looked like a scared...
Yeah, we went from Hall of Fame, you know, 20-31 to nobody.
Yeah, to see a year out of the league. Yeah. I am on the fence big time on Mitchell Trubisky. He just doesn't look like a guy to me who can think and execute on a moment's notice. He's running around the field, and he's still in year two throwing the ball all the way back across the field. Almost got picked off once, then completed it in a critical situation when he's got, you know, Tarik Cohen running the middle of the field, begging for the football. Like, I mean, he Cohen did everything you want him to do. Sat down in a zone, was just waiting, looking right at Trubisky. So they're one-on-one with each other. He's clearly identified, you know, the defense and the soft spot in the defense, and Trubisky didn't throw him the ball. He threw an incompletion down.
And that's the thing that's so maddening. You know, I don't blame you for being on the fence about Trubisky, but at the end of the day, I sit here and think to myself, during that game, I thought to myself, he's still working on keeping his eyes down the field while he's rolling. He's still working on the art of that, whereas Aaron Rodgers isn't working on that art anymore. So for Trib, I just think the guy will be great for them. It's just taking time.
First of all,
it's Trib. Now it's Trib. It's Trib because he lost the right to be Mitchell, and then he also lost the right to be Mitch when I saw the picture today of his guy standing in the end zone 5 yards wide open.
He lost the right.
Yeah, you lost the right, Mitchell. Bro. Mitchell's no longer in the conversation.
Yeah, and that picture, and it's on my Twitter feed, The Monty Show, MONTY The Monty Show. There's a picture of Mitchell Trubisky in the middle of the field, in the red zone, no pressure, great offensive line play, with a wide receiver wide open in the middle of the end zone. Trubisky held the ball, rolled out, and got dropped for a 5-yard loss when you should have had 6 points. And it is one of those situations where he's got to improve. Mitchell Trubisky is going to determine whether or not the Bears win or lose football games. He's got productive wide receivers. He's got productive running backs. And you have an offensive line that's fighting for him.
Yeah.
And he's not executing. He's got to improve because that defense is good enough up front to cover for really, 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 really average corners. You're good enough to cover for those guys.
Yeah.
But not if you're on the field constantly because the offense can't convert and is constantly, like, how many times in the second half? How many times are you 3rd and 8? If you're Mitch Trubisky and the Bears, you cannot be 3rd and 8.
I just go back to, what kind of play calling are we going to in the second half up by 20?
Play calling. Like, terrible,
dude,
play calling.
Why, again, I know we talked about this yesterday, not trying to rehash it, but how conservative can one offensive coordinator get? Like,
well,
come on,
bro. Came out throwing the ball in that first possession, and then I think they got a little spooked when Aaron Rodgers started doing his thing, and Matt Nagy got conservative,
and all of a sudden... So it just doesn't add up to me, right? Like, so you see Aaron Rodgers come out, you see the magic start to happen. Aaron Rodgers is just sitting out there with his broom, stirring the black kettle pot, like, here we go.
Yep.
And you run the ball? That just doesn't make any sense. Okay, so we're trying to burn the clock. Bro, you're not trying to burn the clock with 20-plus minutes to go in the game.
But I understand, to a certain extent, why you wanted to run the ball. But you didn't. What did you do? Especially, like, throughout the fourth quarter, you put the ball in Mitchell Trubisky's hands when you should have been handing it off to Howard, who was getting almost anything he wanted. And if you wanted to throw the ball, use your West Coast principles, which are clearly in this offense, and throw the ball to Cohen. Because that's what he's good for.
Yeah.
Anyway, I am really on the fence about him. Jimmy Garoppolo. By the way, the Bears are Monday Night Football at home against Seattle. That's a game that they probably should win. For what it's worth, that's a game they probably should win. Jimmy Garoppolo and the 49ers. Tough assignment out the gate to play the Vikings in Minnesota. Excuse me, in Minnesota. There, I will only say so many times that the Vikings right now, in my opinion, are the second best team in the NFC after what we saw from the Rams last night.
Yeah.
But how much are you buying what you saw from Jimmy Garoppolo? Because for me, I actually think he played well, and I know that there's a lot of people who are ripping Jimmy Garoppolo today, and I think you're mistaken. Jimmy Garoppolo hung in with one of the best defenses in the NFL in the Vikings, and yes, he threw three interceptions. Yes, he made a lot of really bad decisions. I agree with that. But he also made some really good throws. And he got the football to guys, and they made plays. The problem was Jimmy Garoppolo missed a lot of windows.
Yeah.
He was behind a lot of guys, especially in the red zone. He was not very good at all.
This was that game to me where it felt like Garoppolo was playing at, like, maybe fourth year instead of fifth year. Felt like the Vikings defense was just a little bit quicker than he was. And I think that's what makes their defense so special. I mean, you can't put a price on speed. You know, speed kills, whether you're a wide receiver or a safety. You know, and so I think Garoppolo's got way more than we saw in this game. But you're right, the three turnovers are the big mistakes. I mean, you can miss throws, but when you turn the ball over, that's putting your defense back on the field when they really shouldn't be, and that's when you run into problems later in the game.
They need to, A, run more plays, but B, you got to run more than 25 times total. That's not enough, and I know that they miss Carlos Hyde right now, and you know they're trying to find it, but I thought Breida gave him quality carries. Alfred Morris probably is not the guy that you need him to be, but they can run the ball well enough. I actually really like Jimmy Garoppolo.
I'm
dislike not down
him.
On him at all. I really am not. You want to talk about a guy I'm down on? I think the Texans might be one of arguably the biggest disappointments of week one. And Deshaun Watson, I don't know any other way to say that he was awful.
Yeah,
he was not a good quarterback this weekend, and it was surprising. I was excited. I think we said on Friday.
Did we think he was going to come out after how long he had been out and dominate? Or not dominate, but like have a good outing, I guess.
Better than 17 of 34. Better than overthrowing just about everybody. You know, they especially when you run the way that they were able to run, when you run it 34 times and you're averaging 5 yards a carry, that's the stuff of dreams in the National Football League.
Yeah.
He should have had time. And when you have guys like Hopkins and Ellington and, I mean, you have guys that can
catch.
And
Hopkins can run.
The flip, they have talent in Houston to throw the ball. And he was the problem. Much like with Trubisky, he was the problem.
But I think overall, I would say that Deshaun's been out for a long time, and this is his first time back in a game, and I think there's a lot that goes with it, and I know that that sounds like an excuse, but there's no replicating the intensity of an NFL game. You know,
It was Foxborough. It was Tom Brady.
Yeah,
I mean,
he's out of his element. You know, there's definitely rust, both mentally and physically. I don't care how many weights you lifted in the offseason. I mean, there's rust.
Yeah.
You know, that you can get all the reps in camp. But
and they didn't quit. Houston didn't quit, and
I still think they're going to be a really good team. I agree he's got to improve, and he's got to make those plays, but they're going to be a good team.
Bill O'Brien has to be a better football coach, and Deshaun Watson's got to be more accurate than that. You can't complete 50%
of your passes.
All Deshaun's got
to get back to is what he was before he got hurt. That's it. Get back to being that guy, and you're good. And they're really good.
I think one of the scariest performances, and not in a good way, was Derek Carr, who was terrible. I watched all of that game, and his numbers, people are like, well, what's the problem? He threw for 300 yards. And the problem is he missed touchdown throws. He threw a bunch of interceptions. And you had a situation where Derek Carr was just flat bad. Like,
the turnovers.
His numbers, And I know that you say to yourself, okay, well, if a quarterback throws for 300 yards, you should probably win the game or be in a position to win the game. The Raiders in the second half never showed up. Yeah. He never came out of the locker room.
And I think it's funny that today's show is all about trends, apparently, because they are not the only team that came out and dominated the first half and then were nobody in the second half.
Yeah.
You know, and so I think in week one, you're seeing a lot of the oh man, it's week one, let's come out and really push it in the first half, but then we got nothing left in the tank.
Well, that's a sign of a good team. The best teams are all really good at halftime adjustments.
Yeah.
It's why teams like New England are consistently winning games in the second half, and they're able to execute when they're exhausted.
Yeah.
And then there's teams like the Raiders, and there's teams like the Bears, and it's why the Cleveland Browns can't kick a field goal in the rain. You know,
amazing.
You just have these situations where, and I know they lost, because for the Pittsburgh Steelers, that tie was a loss.
For sure.
But Watt makes an incredible play to block a field goal to preserve a tie.
Yeah.
So it's just that thing where you have to be a little better than that. And what the hell happened to Matthew Stafford? Because he was another guy that was just terrible.
Out of the guys we've talked about today, this is the most concerning one to me, because Matthew Stafford is a professional, a proven guy, not hurt, no, like, you know, totally normal procedure, comes out and plays awful.
The Lions were bad. And speaking of the third quarter, the Jets blew the doors off the Lions in the third quarter. And that brings us to, you know, some of the surprising positive performances, which is Sam Darnold of the New York Jets, who throws his first pass for a pick six and then actually turned out to be okay. 16-21, 198, two touchdowns and an interception.
I mean, that to me says he's got the right head on his shoulders. I know he's a USC quarterback, and I know there's stigma that comes with that, and I'm not even a Darnold guy. I'm not even a Darnold guy on any level. But my guy on my team, Crowell, did work. He found that guy for you know, 10 and 102. And so I just think, look, I think Darnold has it in him, but I know we've said that in the past. What impresses me the most is that the first pass of your entire freaking career, you turn the ball over.
On a terrible throw, and then, all the way like back it never across
happened.
The field.
Like it never happened. Goes out and just lights him up like it's no big deal.
Yeah. Well, you got to have a short memory as a quarterback. And that Lions defense giving up 5 yards a carry to the Jets.
That's not good enough.
That's something that is really scary. You know, but Sam Darnold, I think, was one of the good stories.
Let's be honest, though. Let's be real clear about who Sam Darnold was playing. The Lions are not going to be anything special this year. And no, so I would love to see.
That much is clear.
I would love to see Darnold go up against an elite defense this year and see what he's really capable of. And I would love to see it in the middle of the year when he's got the entire playbook in his head and he's fully, like, all guns are ready to go. Once he's at that point, I would love to see what he can do at this level.
Alex Smith is another guy I think that was a great story this weekend. The Washington Redskins, I think, shocked the world by just destroying the Arizona Cardinals. Alex Smith was his typical self, and I'll say this every time that he wins a game. I don't care if you want to call him a game manager, if you want to say he's just some average guy.
Bro, he's a gamer.
21 of 30, 255, and two scores. Didn't turn the ball over, got a great running performance out of Adrian Peterson, and the Washington Redskins won. And I think Alex Smith was one of those quarterbacks that surprised a lot of people. And, you know, for me, I'd love to have him as my starting quarterback. If I'm the 49ers, I still miss him. If I'm the Chiefs, now, obviously the Chiefs got a nice performance out of their guy as well.
Mahomes.
But, yeah, you took a huge risk if you're the Kansas City Chiefs there.
There's one word that comes to mind when I think of Alex Smith, and that's reliability. I know what I'm getting out of the guy, and it's consistent. He might not light the world on fire. He's not a 5,000-yard passer or anything like that. But I can put him out there, and he will execute a game plan. He will come out and give it to me how I want it. That's that simple.
Ooh, how do you want it?
I want to win.
Yeah, like Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Do you buy
21 of 28 for 417, four scores.
This absolutely,
Ryan Fitzpatrick was a good
this
story.
This grinds my gears right here because I had 31 points sitting on the bench.
I love it. Here's my problem.
Yeah.
You look at DeSean Jackson, who gave you those points on the bench, five for 146 and two scores. as a fantasy football option, DeSean Jackson's one of those guys where you're like, okay, who's he playing this week and who's his quarterback?
You got to evaluate the matchup.
Yeah, and you've got to figure out what the hell are they going to do with Jameis Winston when he gets back.
I am the guy who says that Jameis has to earn his way back at this point. You're a disappointment, man. You've made the wrong decisions in your life. And I get that, you know, people can change and move on from that. But now he's at a point in his career. He's still a young guy by some people's estimations. My point is, you got to prove it now. You can't be messing up off the field, be less than average on the field, and think that people are just going to bring you back and kick Fitzpatrick out when he just lit it up against the Saints.
He's not, in my opinion, Tampa's going to move on from him after this year.
I would.
Yeah.
And by the way, I know I said before week one that Fitzpatrick was a viable option. I'm not saying he's great or anything special. He gets the job done.
But he proved he can go because, by the way, they won 48-40, but Drew Brees threw the ball 45 times for 439 yards and three scores. He rated himself 129. He got beat because Ryan Fitzpatrick rated 156.
Yeah.
Holy cow.
That's what happened to me in fantasy, man. I had a great game and still got beat.
Yeah, see, that's the worst part. You scored the second most points in the league.
So I scored 150 points, right around there. And the guy I was playing scored 183, I think.
That's just the way fantasy football
but
goes.
Let's review. Oh, that's right. My W sitting on the bench. That's rough,
If
bro.
You'd have played Deshaun... You know,
it's my bad.
One more guy I want to talk about is Dak Prescott, because this is becoming a weekly conversation around the league. And I'm starting to move towards the naysayer side of Dak Prescott, because, again, we're seeing a guy that is just not a productive passer. And I agree that their offensive line is now a problem. They have not figured out how to handicap that. I think Jason Garrett is just a vanilla play caller.
Oh, for sure.
And they don't have explosiveness. And you know what? The other thing I think is very clear. I think they miss the talent of Dez Bryant. I don't think that they miss his personality, but I think they miss the talent of Dez Bryant because they're lacking explosiveness outside.
So wait, just to be clear, you're talking about the talent on the field or the talent with the burner accounts?
Yes, both. Yeah, how about Dez Bryant getting caught with burner accounts today? Anyway, the point is, I just feel like Dallas should be better than this.
They're the Dallas Cowboys. You let Dez Bryant go because you thought he was too much to handle in the locker room. And now, once again, what are we talking about? It's exactly what you said earlier about college football. You don't have a guy who's a deep threat. Yeah. BYU has nobody who's a deep threat. The Dallas Cowboys don't have anybody you got to respect deep. And so now, if you're Dak Prescott, who exactly are you going to be thrown to? So Cole Beasley, let me get this right. Cole Beasley is your number one option.
He was this week.
And you let Dez Bryant go.
Yeah, Cole Beasley had 7 for 73. Deontay Thomas, 3 for 27. Allen Hurns, who was supposed to be the number one, had exactly one catch for 20 yards. That's it.
They're in trouble.
That's it. And here's the other problem. When they throw to Ezekiel Elliott, because that offensive line is struggling, they can't get out and run those screen plays effectively. So he's got 3 for 17 yards. 3 catches for 17 yards.
Yeah.
It's a real problem.
That's what I say. You got to build it from the ground up. And if you're not good up front on either side of the football, you're not going to win games.
Yeah, I totally agree. Anyway, so again, we'll have locks in the NFL on Friday. Every Friday during the football season, we'll do college and NFL locks for you. We'll pick a number of games. And, you know, a bunch of people on Twitter asked me, well, why don't you just pick every game? I'm not going to pick every game against the spread.
Nobody cares about every game.
Yeah, I think really? We did really well, and I'm actually really proud of the way, because I think it's easier to pick games against the spread than it is straight up. And we went 5-7 in college football against the spread this weekend. We went 3-5 in the NFL against the spread this weekend.
Not bad.
I'm pretty happy with that.
Week one rust. I mean, not too bad.
Yeah, and it is really. I think this is the time of year to make your money. If you are a guy that gambles and you bet games, I know a lot of people who bet games. I get text messages and phone calls all the time. Hey, what do you think of this game? Or how should I bet this game? Or I know a ton of people that do it. I don't personally gamble much, but I give a ton of gambling advice. okay. and I do okay. That's the key. If I bet my own money, I always make the wrong selection. When it's not my money and I'm just giving advice,
there's no pressure.
Generally, I do okay.
Yeah, man.
Hey, a couple things left I want to talk about. This cereal thing continues to be a real problem for me. Because there were more reports about more people getting sick off of this Roundup weed killer thing that's going on in cereal. Or people are now trying to, this is the right way to say that. People are now trying to point their sickness to Roundup being in their cereals. And if you didn't know, there was a, is it right to say scandal?
An epidemic of weed killer.
That turned up, they did some research and tested a bunch of cereals. And there is a product called Roundup, which is a weed killer that you can use at your house.
Yeah, you've all seen it.
But it's also a major commercial weed killer, right? And there's an ingredient called glyphosate that is in Roundup. And glyphosate has been turning up in oat-based cereals. So like Quaker Oats, Cheerios. I mean, there were a lot of big-time cereals that were turning up with levels of glyphosate that scared people. So now there are some consumers trying to turn those into lawsuits. And my wife thinks I'm a little neurotic because I am a huge oatmeal consumer. Like, I love oatmeal. Peanut butter and jelly oatmeal, I love all natural peanut butter. Some sugar-free jelly. And it was Quaker Oats. Rolled oats. Love that. Quaker Oats had one of the highest glyphosate contents of all the cereals. So what was my go-to, like, hard cereal, dry cereal? Cheerios, which had the second highest content of Roundup Weed Killer in it.
Bro.
So basically what I had to do, and my wife is great. My wife is essentially vegan. She doesn't eat much animal product at all. She'll have some eggs occasionally. She never eats meat. So she has a real good grasp on, hey, try this or try that, or organics this or organics that. So I'm into now organic oats, some organic 365, I think is what I have right now. And we're eating real organic cereal now because I'm never going to give up cereal. I do not drink cow's milk, by the way. I'm an almond milk drinker. I know I'm an idiot, whatever.
I love it.
Point is, dude, you don't understand the things in life. You don't understand how important they are until you don't have them. Like last week, my Wi-Fi was out for an entire day. And it wrecked me for like a week because I had to reconnect my DirecTV Genie to Wi-Fi. My Vivint Smart Home Security had to reconnect it to Wi-Fi. All of my smart lights, because I have those, like my wife controls some of our lights in our house, like our entryway and our bedroom light. You can tell. And I don't want to say her name because the pod Amazon is sitting product. Right here. The Amazon Home Pod, Alexa, is sitting right here. But you can tell her, hey, baby, turn on the bedroom. And she'll turn on the bedroom light. So we had to reconnect the pod. We had to reconnect, like, all this stuff. So, like, you don't understand how important your home Wi-Fi is until you don't have it. You don't understand how important your feet and your thumbs are until you don't have them. And I'm telling you, when you have to give up cereal against your will, until you're pouring those oats out near the garbage can, you don't understand how much you love Quaker Oats rolled
Real
oats.
Talk.
That's all I'm saying. One cereal, regardless of how it's killing you. One cereal.
All day. Ain't even close.
You gotta branch out, man.
It ain't even close.
You gotta branch out. Oatmeal is definitely one of my go-to cereals. But I think I am probably Golden Grahams or Cinnamon
Golden
Toast
Grahams
Crunch.
Golden Grahams are fire. I'll give you
Cinnamon
that.
Toast Crunch or Golden Grahams. I think that's my go-to.
I was never an Apple Jacks cereal. Guy.
No, and I'm not a Fruit Loops guy. It's the same cereal, different
Peanut
flavor.
Butter Captain Crunch is bomb.
Yeah, but it hurts my mouth. It, like, kicks the
it
crap out of my
It is a rough
mouth.
Cereal.
Oh,
yeah,
man. Like,
tough.
Your gums in the roof of your mouth. And,
yeah.
But, man, you want to hand me some Cinnamon Toast Crunch all day long?
Dude,
I'll do that.
Let's be honest. I love Cheerios. Love
I know.
Them.
Honey Nut Cheerios?
Bomb. Oh, man.
Honey Nut Cheerios in a little, you know, unsweetened vanilla almond milk.
Beautiful thing.
30 calories
Dude,
a cup.
Dude, it's a staple. Mm. Same time every day.
Love
Pour
it.
It up.
Love it. You know what else? And I think I've said this on the show, so I'm sorry if I'm being redundant. Some toast in the morning dipped in your cereal You put a little peanut butter and jelly on some toast on a nice whole grain seeded bread.
But don't dip it.
Oh, I love
don't
it.
Don't dip it. Come on. Come on.
I love it. I love toast. You know, my wife made for breakfast today. What's the name of the bread we bought? Bob's
crazy
bread, whatever. Burger, yeah. It had 21
killer.
Seed.
It's Bob's killer bread.
Yeah,
Bob's
whatever.
Killer bread. Yeah.
They make bagels, right? So they're, you know, whole grain bagels.
We have bagels in this house, and you didn't tell me.
Yes, they're in the refrigerator, right in front of your face.
Savage.
But you're a millennial, so you don't see things that are obvious. Anyway, point is, I'll stop. Point is, my wife made avocado bagels. So toasted the bagel, spread fire. Avocado on them, and then toasted and or Dave's bread. Thank you. My wife just walked
Dave's
over.
Dave's killer
to
bread, thinly
Dave's
cut.
Dave's killer bread.
Okay, thank
yeah.
you.
Thank you. My wife, see, she wears like yoga pants just to mess with me. Anyway,
okay.
The point is,
I'm sorry. Where does that fall on this show?
I don't. It does. Well, she just walked over here in yoga pants. Anyway, the point is this. So Dave's killer bread. She made toasted the bagel. She put some guac, like I bought those little holy guacamole cups from Costco.
Oh, fire.
So you spread the guac on there, and then she like pan-fried an egg. And you just put that egg on the bagel with the guac. I put a little Kroger salsa. Here's something you can do. Go to Kroger and get salsa cups. And I don't know if you know, like in Arizona, it's fries. I don't know the Kroger product in SoCal, but whatever. Anyway, Vons. Okay, there you go. Kroger Foods makes salsa cups, and the salsa in those cups is divine. It is so good. It's portioned out. You can, like me and my wife can split one of those salsa cups for breakfast. It's perfect, and it is so good. And then if you really want to get next level, and this is who my wife is, she'll get organic refried black beans.
Love them.
Warm those up in the microwave, spread them on the bagel
or
the toast.
Pro tip, though. You need to cover those things before you put them in the microwave.
They will explode. Yeah. Absolutely. Warm them up, spread the refried black beans, organic, on the bagel, then put the guac, then put the egg, then put the salsa, and eat it as a sandwich. It's orgasmic.
Bada boom, bada bing.
Bada bing, we're out of here. You're going to be gassy all day, but it's fine, and you're going to be healthy. Do you know your resting heart rate? You don't. Mine's 56 today.
See, that's where you're obsessive.
Oh, I totally am. I care, but hey, man, I try to burn 40,000 calories a week. I don't often get there. I'm usually about 34, 35,000 calories a week. I'm trying. And finally, I always like saying that. And finally, new research out on the usage of Facebook. 26% of adults have deleted Facebook off of their phone. Buying or selling that? You believe in that?
Believe in deleting it or believe the stats?
Believe that usage of Facebook is on the way down.
Oh, for sure I do. Yeah, I think Facebook is just, it's a dying brand. I mean, let's be honest about it. I mean, you know best. You're a Twitter, Instagram guy. I'm more of a heavy Instagram user. I get a lot of entertainment out of Instagram, I think. Facebook I go to because I have a lot of groups on there. Like, so I have a lot of car groups and things I look at. And so I use it more as a networking tool more than anything. I don't post a lot, to be honest with you. Like, I don't post a ton, but I use it for really, I use the Messenger app more than the actual Facebook app. That's the problem.
I use the Facebook Pages app for my Monty Show political page. I almost never look at the generic Facebook feed anymore. One, it pisses me off that they tweak that feed and I don't see stuff that I want to see. And two, I just am so tired of the narcissistic BS that's on Facebook that I tend not to use it.
Yeah.
But Pew Research Center did a survey that says Americans have drastically cut back their use of Facebook. The survey conducted in late May and early June shows that 42% of American adult users of Facebook took a break for several weeks or more from looking or opening the Facebook app. 26% deleted the app from their phone altogether. That's this guy. I do not have the regular blue F Facebook app on my phone. I deleted it. I don't need it in my life. Now, it's on my MacBook. It is one of the staple tabs on my Safari. So when I open up Safari, Twitter and Facebook are the two, like I minimize the tabs in the left corner. So they're always
I'm
there.
I'm just curious if there's, not to get super technical nerd, but I wonder if having that on your computer like that has the same effect that an app would on an iPhone. Like, you know what I mean? Like how they can get your data and pictures and locate. Yeah, like, you know what I mean?
I have done everything that I can do. And here's the other thing. 54% of adults in this Pew Research study have adjusted their privacy settings.
I have.
So have I. I completely locked down my privacy on my Facebook account. I taught my mother-in-law how to do it and did it for her last time that I was at her house. And I think you have to. That absolutely makes sense. These percentages are even higher for users between the ages of 18 and 49. Older people are apparently more conservative and less able to understand Facebook's convoluted privacy settings.
I think older folks just don't care, frankly. Yeah.
Well, 42% of the audience, they say, has drastically cut their use of Facebook. Unless you ask Facebook, who says that they have 185 million active users. And that is driving their ad revenue, which, and again, these are numbers that are provided by Facebook. $6.1 billion in advertising revenue in the second quarter, according to Facebook.
Well, I mean, it works.
That's incredible.
It works.
Year to year, they're up almost $2 billion in
advertising. Well, I mean, if you think about why the leak actually happened at the core of it, why did the leak happen? Because you can target people.
Yeah.
You can change people's perspective, literally.
And they are. And they, I just, look, I don't hate Facebook. I see it as a purpose. But you're right. I'm a Twitter guy. I do 500,000 impressions a month on Twitter. You know, I don't have a very big account. I only have 5,000 plus followers. So I don't have a huge account. But I talk to a lot of people on Twitter. And I've really tried to tailor the things that I tweet and the conversations I have, you know, based on what I think people would want to talk about. You know, I tweeted a video today, in fact, of George W. Bush, because today's 9/11. You don't probably remember, but George W. Bush threw out the first pitch at a baseball game.
Yeah.
And it was a freaking big deal. And I said at that moment that that was a hugely important moment in this country. Because at that moment, we all became Americans. Everybody watching that moment, we were Americans together. And what I tweeted out was, this is a significant moment in history as Americans. It's one of the last times we were truly all united. And the reason that that is true is because, A, it was Yankee Stadium. It was New York. It was ground zero. And B, shortly after that, in the months after that, we went to war. And when we invaded Iraq, it sharply divided the country. And I don't know that we've gotten over that. Because pretty soon it was Obama, and now it's President Trump. And we've just found ourselves so divided across these different lines and ideologies. And that was one of the last moments that we were truly united as Americans. And I kid you not, that tweet did 90,000 impressions on Twitter today. That's the power of Twitter. And if I don't like it, I can mute you. And if you don't like me, you can mute me. And then I can still see your stuff, and you can still see my stuff, and we don't have to fight, and you don't have to tell me that you're a Republican and I'm a dick. And like, you know, I can really filter that. That's what I like about Twitter. And if I don't want to open up my Instagram app, I don't have to. You know, but you know what else I like about Instagram? I can market the podcast on Instagram. I can talk about shoes on Instagram. I can talk about food on Instagram. I can talk about anything I want on Instagram. And if you don't like it, you can just skip my story. Like, I almost never just post a picture, like a static picture in my Instagram time, like full time there. I always use Instagram story. I don't even know what you would call on my feed. Instagram wall. Like, yeah, I don't do that. I almost always use my Instagram story feed. And I love it. It's so much fun. I can tailor what I see. I can skip the stuff. I Twitter and Instagram is what I like about social. I'm trying to get back into Snapchat a little bit because a lot of people have asked me about Snapchat and they like that. Like the nice thing about Snapchat, you don't have to be verified to put a link in Snapchat. So I can put a clickable link to the show on my Snapchat.
Yeah.
And I actually get 4 or 5 listens an episode off of Snapchat links. And solid. I really like that.
Yeah, I was never a huge Snapchat guy myself, but I get what you're saying. I mean, it's you know, Twitter and Instagram are just different. They're just different, man, and it's that simple.
And you know the cool thing about Instagram today? Like the National Weather Service, putting all these pictures, there's a video. I think my wife might have sent it to me. Or I'm going to show it her. I don't know. The Hurricane Florence, it's just amazing. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, otherwise known as NOAA, flies airplanes into the hurricane so that they can measure wind and speed. And the videos that they're putting out are remarkable. Like they're flying through the clouds of the hurricane, and then all of a sudden they fly right through the middle of the eye of the hurricane. And it's one of the most beautiful things you'll see. And so I tweeted that today, and you know, it just stuff like that. I really get off on that. Like, I love that. I think that's such cool visuals. I can put that on Twitter and it's on Instagram. I love that. Anyway, I could go on.
Solid.
How's the girlfriend?
Solid, man. Good. She's cruising.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nothing really. There's not too much going on, frankly. I mean, it's just, we're just chilling right now.
You guys ring shopping yet?
No. Nope.
Kids' names yet?
Nope.
Did she hear that show?
I don't know. Didn't bring it up, so probably not. Back to the top.
All right. I'm not trying to be awkward. I'm not trying to be overbearing helicopter dad.
No, I mean, I don't think she listens every day.
Do you like that she doesn't listen?
I don't really care.
Yeah, after what you say, yeah, I do. I'm glad she doesn't listen. So, you know how I know you're an adult, by the way? You actually got an Amazon Prime account. Congratulations. I'm proud of you.
Thanks.
What did you get delivered to the house today?
Vitamins.
Nice.
Yeah.
Are you taking your vitamins every day?
I will be.
Attaboy. Make sure you find me on Twitter, The Monty Show. MONTY, The Monty Show. That's also where you find us, wherever you get your podcasts. iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud. It's The Monty Show. Say goodbye, Jake.
Goodbye, Jake.